From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 388, Building New SQL Server Hardware with guest Brent Ozar, recorded Thursday, September 18th, 2014. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. We couldn't do it without you. Today, my guest is Brent Ozar, and he loves to make SQL Server faster and more reliable. He created SP Blitz and SP Ask Brent, co-authored Professional SQL Server 2008 Internals and Troubleshooting, and he loves sharing knowledge about BrentOzar.com. He's a Microsoft Certified Master of SQL Server and a Microsoft MVP. Can you still call yourself a Certified Master? Because nobody else gets to be one anymore, right?
Dun, dun, dun. Yes. That's like, isn't that the best career thing ever? You know, when they said they were discontinuing the program, I was like, well, I'm heartbroken because nobody else can have the fun of those exams.
Yeah.
But at the same time, presto, I am in a very, very small club.
Yes, you are in a very small. There's only, I don't think there's 100.
Yeah, there's a couple hundred of us. Most of them work for Microsoft,
right? Though,
so they keep their heads down and, you know, bang away on stuff. But yeah, it is neat. And they still have a really active mailing list, so people will email in with these questions. And I'm like, wow, this is really hard. You know, I don't know what the answer is.
Not simple questions, tough questions. I'm going to need a laboratory to answer this question.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I've got this $1 million worth of storage gear. Whoa, hold on. I can't replicate that.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Makes for some fun discussions.
I got an opportunity to tour the Microsoft data centers, one of them recently. And I'm not even allowed to say where it was, but it was a 5-9s data center, which I haven't had to deal with in the past few years. I've just forgotten what redundancy really means.
God, it is so much work. And I think you casually hear executives throw around, you know, oh, I want 5-9s. I want to be as available as, you know, Microsoft.com is, or right, available as, you know, and you just don't realize how much thought and planning. Even just start with the basics. Do you have an identical staging environment where you're going to repeatedly test anything you're going to do?
Right.
Well, no, that costs money and slows things down. Yes, absolutely it does.
Yeah. And it costs a lot of money. Well, and I find it really interesting looking at a lot of more modern data centers. This is an older data center that was 5-9s. Most modern data centers are 3-9s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, because, you know, if good developers, I have so much respect for good developers, just build in redundancy at the data center level.
Yeah. It is cheaper, I think, to build 2 3-9 data centers, and you get a lot more utilization and be able to fail between them. And it'd be, and you do the math. I mean, 5-9 is pretty awesome. That's 5 minutes of downtime a year. And 3-9s is, what is it, 4 hours?
Wikipedia has a great post on it. I just always point people over there.
Right.
But I'm like, the other thing that's sweet about it is you're going to have customers who are happy with 3-9s and want to pay less money.
Yes.
And you can sell space in just one of those and they'll be ecstatic.
Well, and I think also that's becoming the standard. Like, in my mind, most cloud infrastructure these days is a 3-9 infrastructure.
Oh, yeah.
So,
and that's still better than what you're usually going to get on-premise by a long shot.
Well, that's always the joke when I'm talking to an organization. They say, well, we can't move into the cloud. It's not reliable enough. So do you actually have your own reliability numbers? Like, do you know where you're at? The only reason you think you're more reliable is you're not keeping records.
Yes. And meanwhile, you go, and I notice that some of your staff isn't here today. Is it because they're troubleshooting an outage?
Yeah.
Well, yes. Billy's off in the data center trying to get the, you know, the hamburger out of the server. You know, yes, this is what happens.
This is what real life is like.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so much work to maintain uptime.
Without a doubt.
We joke about it in SQL Server as well. I mean, how do you go about building a 5-9 SQL Server? Can you do it? Sure. But are you so much better off with 2 SQL Servers in two different places, you know, and not trying to make them solid gold plated reliable? Way easier.
Yeah. It's funny. And I know we want to talk about hardware today anyway, but it's funny how much A, off-the-shelf hardware these days is stunningly reliable. If it's gonna, if it works for 90 days, it'll work for 3 years.
Yes. And I this is one of the things that I loved about, you know, virtualization came in. It kind of freed us from the chains of having to worry about a server going down or whatever. But these days, even physical bare metal clusters, you know, you put something in and it soldiers on for 5 or 10 years. You know, it ends up being the maintenance costs that drive you out, you know, make you move up to newer hardware. It's not so much that the hardware is flaky. But yeah, and the storage of what you can get in modern hardware.
Oh my goodness.
Is incredible.
These, you know, little 1.8-inch SSDs, like the density is insane.
I still can't even believe, you know, having those, you know, in a hand and showing them to somebody, okay, here, this is what we're going to store your database on, is just mind-blowing.
That's what? What is that?
Yeah. Compact flash card? You know, what are these things? And it's always been a running joke for like the last year that you could buy USB thumb drives that were faster than most folks' SANs. You know, that people would get so frustrated with their shared storage, and I'd have a $100 USB drive from Amazon and go, here you go.
Yep.
This is now faster than your SAN. But now that, so Dell's got 730 XDs, their newest generation of servers, that have 1.8-inch drive bays across the front. They have like 16, 18 1.8-inch drive bays across the front. And Intel is selling 800 gig 1.8-inch SSDs.
Wow.
So even before you touch the magnetic bays in the server, because it's still got like, you know, 6 or 8 3.5-inch bays, you've already got 8, 10 terabytes worth of storage. And that is insanely blazingly fast, is inexpensive. This really starts to make databases very different.
This is the form factor thing, right? That little Dell is only a 2U machine.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's got 8 3.5-inch bays in the front. And
yes.
Then in the same space that you could put one row of 4 3.5-inch bays, it's got 6 rows of 3, 18 1.8-inch drives.
Yeah, and these things are just, they're, that gives you the nice ability to do tiered storage. And that's even totally different than solid state PCI Express cards that you'd plug in.
Yes.
You know, the Fusion IOs or the Intel SSDs. So then you end up with, so what Stack Overflow is starting to do with these things is use 3 tiers of storage in one of these 2U boxes. One chassis, you can throw a couple or up to 4 PCI Express drives in there.
Right.
And these things have gotten way cheaper. They're down to a couple few thousand bucks now.
Yes. And they are the insane fast storage. This is the
ridiculous.
L1 of storage.
Yeah. That's a great way to say it. Yeah. That's exactly what it is. It's really your
CPU geek here.
I like that. Yeah, I've never thought of it. I'm going to steal that for a blog post.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's those are ridiculously fast. So all of today's data for all the logging, because they log everything every time anybody comes to a web page, they log every resource that they get, what their user agent string was, what database queries that they ran for troubleshooting purposes. Because then if somebody calls in later and says, you know, I was having an error on a web page, you know, yesterday in my session, can you go take a look? They can replay your entire session, go look at what queries you ran, what errors that you got. Well, of course, this takes a lot of storage because you're talking about one of the 50 biggest websites in the world. Now they can just dump all of today's stuff onto PCI Express solid state drives.
Right.
Every day, shuffle it down to the 1.8-inch drive, still solid state, pretty quick. And then over time, our drop stuff down to the 3.5-inch spinning rust. And they still have inside of one box, they've still got their entire history of all this query, all the statistics that they've ever run. And the boxes are scaling up to meet it. You know, this is stuff that used to be considered big data, quote unquote.
Yeah, no, terabytes are just not that big a deal anymore. They're everywhere.
No, we've got customers running SQL Server with 80 to 100 terabytes worth of data in each SQL Server. And those are numbers that used to scare the pants off of me.
Now, those are racks SAN chassis to make that happen.
In the past they've been, and now they're just smaller and smaller units of all solid state storage, stuff like Pure and Violin, that, you know, we used to need all those hundreds of hard drives just to get IOPS. And, you know, now one of these solid state drives can give you a 250,000 IOPS. It really changes the game.
And not that expensive. I mean, this is still priced in the 2U chassis range. They've not suddenly made this a $50,000 machine.
Yeah, this is something that when you compare the cost of a database administrator, when you compare the cost of, you know, three developers trying to do performance tuning for a week on an application, and you know, with us human meat bags, you don't know what you're going to get at the end of it.
The wages are spent. You'll find out your results at the end of the period, not the beginning.
Yes. And it may get worse.
And it may actually go the other way. So beyond storage is memory, too, because I'm just staggered at how much memory can stuff into these machines now.
I am so happy. Intel really seems to keep pushing boundaries with how much RAM you can stuff in with each. Folks don't understand often that the Xeon processors and the supporting chipsets have limits as to how much memory you can stuff in.
Yeah.
In the past, those two CPU boxes were limited to just 768 gigs of RAM. I say just, right?
Just 3/4 of a terabyte of RAM.
First world problems. And now, I mean, today you can buy them with 1.5 terabytes of RAM. Now, it still is not cheap.
No.
But, you know, and it comes down to the human cost.
Well, and this is, I'm just looking at the specs on that PowerEdge you mentioned. 24 DIMMs. Now, 24 DIMMs. And of course, you're going to go with these are 64 gig or 128 gig DIMMs. Those are expensive DIMMs, and it's 24 of them. Like, this chassis may start at $2,500, but if you load it.
Yeah. Starts cranking up really quickly.
Yeah.
But it's often like, I don't understand. There's not really a lot of reasons these days for SQL Server to jump up to a 4-socket box.
Right.
You know, I get it for other applications, there probably is, but with the SQL servers, we like to call it expensive edition licensing, you know, $7,000 US a core.
Yeah.
That's really a tough sell.
Well, interesting you bring this up, because, I mean, that was the big thing in SQL 2012, was they went to the per core licensing, and like all the AMD guys spat their coffee out when they saw that, right?
They had really bet the farm on, we're going to throw more and more cores in here as quickly as possible.
Because we were licensed per socket, and life was pretty easy on that. And an individual AMD core isn't wildly fast, but when you've got 32 of them in a socket, who cares?
Yeah. And we're now running into that problem with Intel as well. So Intel's newest Haswells have 18 cores. And that's even before hyper-threading, 18 cores in one Xeon processor. That means SQL Server Standard Edition can't even use all of the cores on a single processor. Standard Edition is capped at just 16 cores.
Right.
And this is the year 2014. Today, you know, as we record this, you think about there's going to be, say, 30, 40, 50 core processors over the span of the next few years. And SQL 2014 standard is already capped at just 16. It's going to be a tricky next few years in terms of sizing hardware and SQL Server.
Well, and now that you're paying per core, you've got to see, am I using these?
Uh-huh.
You know, for a long time, we just over-provisioned.
Yeah, and DBAs would freak out if they saw their CPU going to 30, 40%.
Right.
You know, oh my gosh, it's an emergency. But I wish we would have ever had some kind of percentage metric of how busy are the disks, really. Because everybody would have changed. If that was in Task Manager, can you imagine how differently we would approach building servers?
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, would immediately everybody would be throwing solid states in, especially as cheap as they are.
Yes. For you know, SSD seems expensive from a consumer perspective when they're looking at terabyte drives. But when you start looking at SAS drives and enterprise rated RAID drives, like they're just not that cheap. And SSDs, you know, the enterprise class SSDs aren't that expensive all of a sudden.
And it's really weird, too, when you think about it in terms of what performance really costs. So, like, Stack Overflow is a great example. They run everything on commodity Intel drives or Samsung drives, depending on the servers. And there you're talking about a terabyte drive is around about $500 U.S. You know, you think a pair of them, rated together, is $1,000 U.S. for 250,000 IOPS. And sure, they're not quote-unquote enterprise, you know, so people get a little sketchy about that. But who cares if you replace them every 6 months or if you replace them every year? That's the performance is so staggering, and it's not like enterprise drives or magnetic drives have ever been all that reliable either.
No. But, you know, and, you know, we started talking about this sort of three-tier storage of using the PCIe slots as your L1. Oh. then your these 1.8 inch SSDs or any SSDs as your L2. And but for capacity, you can't argue with who's shipping an 8 gig spinning drive now.
Is it Fujitsu? 8 terabyte.
8 terabyte spinning drive.
Seagate. Yeah, Seagate.
Has an 8 gig drive. Drive!
Yeah, I look at, I've got a Drobo at home for my home backups.
Yeah.
And I've got like 2 terabyte and 3 terabyte drives in there.
Yep.
And I keep looking at 8 terabyte drives going, that would be magical. I can't fill it.
No, you never, you have too much capacity. No. You're done.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and then the other problem with whether it's Drobos or your SQL servers, how do you back it up?
Yeah.
You know, when you put dozens or hundreds of terabytes in one SQL server and it's time for a backup, who cares if you've got backup compression? You're still going to have to shuffle all this stuff across the wire and life will not be easy for you.
That is the weak point, right? We're back to 10 gig networking, which is still expensive, can't handle this.
Yeah. HP's got a brand new ML350, 48 small form factor drive bays or 24 3.5 inch drives. So even with just 6 terabyte drives, you can put 144 terabytes worth of data in there. How are you going to move that across the network?
Yeah.
It's
you can't get it out.
It's not going
to
happen.
It's an interesting problem now is that we're back to the net. The cable is really the bottleneck.
Yeah, same thing with wide area networks. You know, I've got customers who are really excited about always on availability groups when that came out. Now I can have a secondary replica somewhere else. Well, sure you can, but how's your wide area network? You know, if we've got 20 terabytes of data, let's just say, what happens if your replica gets far enough behind that we have to go restore it from scratch?
Yeah.
You know, you're back to FedExing tapes around.
For sure. Hey, I got to pay the bills here. Run As Radio is brought to you by ScriptRock, the makers of Guardrail and the fighters of Configuration Drift. Configuration Drift happens in every environment, from 5 nodes to 5,000. Guardrail will find and scan configurations of every node in your environment, no matter what the platform, and alerts you to changes happening across machines. Give it a try for 3 months free with the coupon code RUNASRADIO, all one word, or at scriptrock.com/RUNASRADIO. The wide area network problem is a really interesting one because more and more I'm getting this high value data storage problem and they want an offsite, but it's so much data.
Yeah. And of course, there's some tricks you can do with compression, but it gets trickier with even SQL 2012 and 2014 both. You know, if I put 2 replicas offsite in 2 different cities, I have to refresh them both from the primary. That's twice as much WAN traffic that I have to put out there. That's starts to get really painful. And I've had people, especially with these high-density SQL servers, you know, we talk about the new Dells and HPs, literally start with 2 of them next to each other in the rack, get them caught up in sync, pull one of them out and FedEx it somewhere else because that's the only way they can keep up.
And maintain a change log in the meantime while it's in transit to catch it up again.
Yeah, yeah. As long as you can catch it up fast enough, you know, rack it as soon as that thing gets in via shipment.
Yeah, suddenly a day delayed in shipping is a lot of data.
It's a really big deal. Yeah.
That's interesting. Also, when you get, you know, that's one thing when it's your racks. It's another thing when it's an ISP or some kind of service or cloud where you just don't have the option. It's way harder to get a machine quickly into the space like that.
Yeah, I wonder about, so Microsoft still doesn't have the ability to FedEx a USB drive over, if I remember right. And Amazon at least gives you that. You can FedEx a USB drive in. But even then, you're talking about the length of time it takes to copy data off a USB or USB 3 drive. Hello, latency.
Yeah, USB 3 just not that fast when you're trying to move 8 terabytes. And heaven help you, it's 150 terabytes because that's a lot of drives to mail.
Yeah, yeah. Reassemble the data over on the other side.
What could go wrong?
The story of my life.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's weird with the cloud thing that I've even had customers start to say, well, I get it. The cloud is flexible. It scales like crazy. But you know what? I'm looking at this $20,000, $30,000 server over here with 1 terabyte of RAM and all solid state drives. I don't know that I really want to re-architect my application to deal with scale out.
Right.
You know, I don't know that I don't want to just throw hardware at the problem.
Yes. And this is what we're talking about looking at these new machines is exactly that. Hey, I got your hardware hammer. It got bigger.
Yeah.
You know, I can whack it pretty hard now.
And you can't buy hardware that big in the cloud. You know, right. God bless Microsoft and Amazon for being conservative, testing the bejesus out of stuff, you know, but they don't throw in these brand new boxes with all, you know, 10 terabytes of local solid state storage that you can.
I never get the sense that you buy into the cloud because you wanted performance transactionally. That's not its strength.
Yeah.
It's never been wildly fast. What it's been is reliable and scale outable.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen benchmark tests where people say, I'm just going to combine these 10 servers. You know, each of them is doing 1,000 transactions a second. I'll combine all 10 and call it 10,000 transactions a second. Well, sure you will, as long as you can design the app that way from the ground up.
Yes.
But if you're accepting customer orders and you have them across 10 different servers, you got to get them back into one sooner or later. You know, it's the sales executive is going to want to see his numbers via crystal reports, you know, business objects kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're not going to at some point you're going to need to roll this up, but it's a really interesting thought. For a long time, I think that there was a declaration that scale out had won. This is how the cloud works. This is what you're going to do. And then you see hardware like this and say, you know, I could scale up a long way.
Yeah. And it's funny that, like, you think of kids coming out of college now, kids, you know, if you're being taught how to do programming, you know, sure, you're taught to do things in a distributed way. You're taught to write things across multiple database servers. But when push comes to shove and everybody's building their application, they're not building in sharding logic. They're not building in distributed data. They're going against one database because that's easy and you go to market fast. And then you hit the homepage of Reddit or Mashable or whatever, and you need to scale like crazy. And scale up still has a lot of, you know, it's like the mermaid song calling from the rocks.
Yep.
Come on over. I've got 8 solid state drives for $3,000.
Yeah.
Join me. Yeah, we see the same thing with customers all the time. It's that we already went and built it. We'd love to shard out, but it's just not going to happen this year. What hammer can we throw at this thing really quickly?
And this hammer's now bigger, so we can definitely step it up a notch and keep going down this path for longer with the belief, and I don't know how many times you've run into this, eventually you hit a point where it's like, that's fast enough.
Yes, yes. You can do that? Yeah. I mean, especially the instant you hit the tipping point of being able to cache the database in memory, all of a sudden the magic happens.
Yeah.
You know, when that bottleneck of disk goes away, even whether it's a solid state disk, and you don't have to worry about round tripping back and forth, holding locks while you're going and getting data off a disk, it's magical.
Yeah, this is what a terabyte of RAM actually does for you. SQL a dedicated box with that big of RAM so that those tables are now living in memory. They're still being asynchronously synced to solid state or some kind of permanent storage. You don't have to do anything for that. You know, you get that from SQL for free. You know, when I talk to developers, that's the whole conversation I have, right? You know how you're writing that caching and you're going to write the asynchronous layer to write it back to disk later? That's what a database does already, dude.
Yeah. And it's I also hear it a lot from VM sysadmins. And we got a comment on our blog today from somebody who said, listen, why would I ever give 64 gigs of RAM to a brand new SQL server? Most of them just aren't going to need it. I'm going to make them go fix their code. And I'm like, oh, man, it's like the cheapest resource that's out there. You're making yourself look bad.
Yeah.
No one really thinks the developers are that bad. You know,
right.
Everybody's turning around and looking at the VM guys going, you know, really? Less memory than we put in? A good friend of mine works in a programming team. They just started giving all of their developers 128 gigs of RAM on their desktops. They have server-grade machines on their desktops so they can compile blazing fast. They can run multiple VMs for testing.
Yeah.
The desktops.
Well, it means they can simulate a production environment. They can run three or four VMs at once and make it real.
Yeah. And when you look at the human cost, you know, what it costs to, and I usually tell people, of course, you get focused in on what does a developer actually make or what does a sysadmin make. Just think $100 an hour, because at the end of the day, your office time, your training time, your benefits, your human resources, insurance, all that stuff, $100 an hour is just a good number to start with.
Well, you're also playing the CapEx, OpEx games. Wages are sunk expenses.
Yeah.
Right? Buying RAM is technically a capital expenditure. It's an asset. It depreciates. You know, after you've spent that money, you technically still have that money. You just turned it into memory.
Yes. Oh, and then suddenly you can put your people back to doing what they really should be doing, which is building features, you know, adding more stuff in that gets your customers more excited. Yeah, absolutely crazy.
Yeah, that makes all the difference in the world, right? To be able to move forward all the time. Yeah. But I love the idea that the DBA is trying to spin this as a weakness in developers, and everybody else is going to look at it as a weakness in the gear.
Yeah. Especially when you look at how quickly hardware has changed over time, and somebody waltzes in with a spec sheet on something like, you know, one of these Dells or HPs.
Yeah.
Says, here you go. It's 768 gigs of RAM, you know, costs less than the developers do for a week. You know, what should we do?
Yeah.
And next thing you know, hardware is getting racked.
Yeah.
And I also tell DBAs, look, don't look at it as a weakness that you're not an amazing performance tuner. Don't look at it as the developers are weak for not being able to write better code. Servers are a great crutch.
Yeah.
Let's start using some of those crutches. They're like cheat codes.
Yeah.
Who of us doesn't use cheat codes?
Yeah. Take advantage of it while, you know, it's there. And clearly the bar continues to go upward.
Yeah. Who knows what conversation we're going to have in the next 2 years? You know, what already people are complaining about, what are the Windows limitations and how much memory it can handle?
Right.
Because both of the Dell and HP are both bringing out 6 terabyte servers.
Yeah.
You know, and that, golly, sure, the amount of data we're going to keep pouring in is going to be big. But, you know, look at that amount of memory and what you can pull off with that. It's pretty stunning. Even the Dell 730s are doing automatic caching as well. You can set up those drives so that the SSD drives automatically cache stuff off of the hard drives.
Right.
And for DBAs, we struggled with partitioning. Yep. How do I separate hot data and cold data? You know, maybe it requires Enterprise Edition to do this. Maybe it requires code changes. Screw it. Let the hardware manage that.
Yeah.
You know, let the hardware manage what's hot, what's really hot needs to be pinned to RAM, and then what needs to float on down to magnetic storage.
So that you know what you're getting. You know, let the best that have tuned these things already, like, I don't want to own this code, and I'm good at it. I'm a good performance tuner, and I still would rather utilize the stuff that's been built by the professionals and tested over and over and over again.
Especially with the SQL 2014 brought out all these in-memory features.
Right.
We have Hackathon that is in-memory OLTP, but it requires code changes, very risky code changes. No triggers, no cursors. You can't add indexes. You can't join to other tables that aren't in Hackathon. You can't use different snapshots. I mean, I could just go on and on with all these limitations. Or you could just buy faster hardware and let the server take a lot of that load off for you.
Well, I like everything about Hackathon, but I also acknowledge that it's version 1.
Oh, man. You
know, like, they got it out the door. Thank you very much. On one hand, I'm the guy who loves to go fast. I want to play with the fast stuff. And on the other hand, the engineer in me looks at that and goes, you know, that's not quite baked yet. I think that'll be awesome in 2 more versions.
Yeah, exactly. I love, and I'm actually genuinely shocked that Microsoft continues to pour good money into on-premise SQL Server.
Yep.
That's fantastic. I keep turning around going, okay, wait, they're going to let SQL Server die, aren't they? They're going to keep pushing everybody to the cloud. No, they keep putting really cool stuff in SQL Server.
Well, and I think it gets back to our earlier conversation that the cloud's good at one thing. It's not necessarily good at everything. You know, it's a scale-out solution, and these scale-up solutions and the on-premise advantage that it gives, is not going to be something the cloud can duplicate very easily.
No, and there's always going to be those clients. I say always. I mean, maybe 3, 4, 5 years from now, it'll be different. But the privacy thing is still so sketchy right now. Yeah, a lot of clients that do legal e-discovery work, and they're just not comfortable putting their most secure data out there to say, we're involved in a lawsuit. Now we're going to put this data out in the cloud and let, you know, strangers
do this analysis this way. And then, and that to me is something that may change over time. As legal precedent comes down and it turns out to be okay, the advantages may land. But this bigger thing of you've got a focal point of data transaction velocity that just doesn't lend itself to sharding very well. Uh-huh. This is not a workaround for that. The solution is a big, beefy machine with these amazing capabilities that can suck down that workload.
Yeah. Stack went through that same challenge. Stack Exchange said, look, here's the deal. Performance is a feature for us. We've documented that, you know, as the web pages get faster, people come more often and are more likely to return. And unless we're going to do a rewrite to where we can shard out, we still need sub-millisecond response times on certain kinds of queries, and we just can't get it out there today. You know, someday I believe we will. Microsoft keeps raising the bar on what they can pull off in Azure, and so does Amazon as well. But yeah, it ain't there. It ain't there today, and I don't think it's going to be there in the next 12 to 18 months.
I tend to agree, Brent. But it's fun. You know, we're going in a cool direction. We're starting to see some really nifty hardware.
Yeah, whether you're doing on-premise work, cloud work, whatever, there's all kinds of really cool things coming out for everybody involved. And it's just so much fun to keep looking at hardware sites every week and going, all right, who's got new presents for me today?
Well, and I wonder if we hit a period of inertia there where the machines, back when we were only selling CPU speed, the machines flattened out a few years ago, and, you know, hardware became commodity. People just weren't upgrading as much. You know, we used to be on a 2-year or 3-year cadence of new gear. As it was coming out of warranty, you get it out, and the new stuff was dramatically better. Looking at this next generation of hardware coming out makes me feel like that again, back in the 90s, when the next gen hardware was so much better, you could start developing your software differently because you could count on when it was ready, the gear would make a huge difference in its behavior. This feels like that.
Yeah, if especially with a multi-tier of storage.
Yes.
Now I can tell database people, stop worrying about deleting archives, you know, getting stuff out of the database. Because the business doesn't ever want you to delete anything.
The business deep down wants one big table of truth. Right?
Yes.
We know it's a bad idea, and we've done all these things to try and mitigate that. But what if we had a machine with 3-tiered storage that could do that for us? So that those archive data, the data is just not changing anymore, is going down to the slowest media, and not that's cheap and doesn't take up not a big deal. And that which is hot is in the hot places.
Uh-huh. I've got a client who every year they start a new database for their, you know, current sales data.
Right.
And they just keep restoring the current stuff onto another SQL server that's got plenty of space, and they union all across all history.
Wow.
And the magical part of that is they have so many reports that they built up over the years in Excel, Crystal Reports, Business Objects, SSRS, that all expect to see the production database structure. And now they can get that through all of time without hitting production.
Yeah.
Because there's just one machine with enough space to manage it. And that, I think, is what's really useful, is all these reports that are already built up. Nobody wants to go off and build a new data warehouse or a new business intelligence team. They just want to run the queries they have and have it return all history data. Let me be able to see trends.
Now, I've always been a big believer in making sure you're dealing with coherent units of granularity on data. Like, do not do if you're reporting across multiple days, you don't do the day that isn't finished.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And same thing with, I've had a lot of companies where they're doing monthly reporting. It's like, well, we can't look at the current month. It's not complete. You know, it's not reconciled. It's only going to upset you. Let's focus on what is a relevant granular piece of data. And the data warehousing reporting server mentality made that much simpler. We just don't bring data into this until it is reconciled. So you never see partial data. You know, going away from that to me makes me nervous that I've gotten a good set of procedures around keeping data coherent. Because once you lose trust from non-technical people about your data, you forever will it haunt you.
I also think I'll start to ask users, what's the decision that you're really going to make here? You know, what? Tell me about the decision that you're going to make and what data you need to support that decision. Because if it really is, you need to see what's happened in the last 30 minutes, I bet you don't need to compare it against last year.
Right.
I bet you really want to know, is the website down?
Yeah.
You know, is our sale working?
Yeah.
And we can get that data. We can get it live from production or use always-on availability groups, but that usually isn't a good source for looking all across time.
Yeah, and it's a different mindset, but you're right. Actually understanding the real requirement and how they're going to act on it can help you shape that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Brendan, a half hour always flies by with you, sir. I really like that you brought this to our attention because it's really cool stuff.
You bet. I get excited just looking at the reviews of the stuff as it comes in.
You bet. Always a pleasure. I'll include some links in the show notes for folks who want to take a look at the same gear.
Cool.
Brent Ozar, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Richard. Always love it.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.